there should be no law against killing people. I know it's a wrong thing, but hell, you restrict somebody from it, they're gonna want it more.
We found our victim, and sad as it may be, she's our friend. But you know what? We all have to make sacrifices. Our first victim is going to be Cassie's daughter. She's going to be alone in a big, dark house out in the middle of nowhere. How perfect can you get?
Hi, friends. My name is Nasra, and welcome back to Unfiltered Noggin. On today's episode, I wanted to cover the chilling case of Cassie Jo Stoddart, also known as the Scream Murderer. So let's not waste any time, and I'll hop into today's mini episode. Cassie Jo Stoddart was born on December 21st in 1989 in Pocatello, Idaho. She has two siblings named Andrew and Christy. The story takes place in 2006 when 16-year-old Cassie was a student at Pocatello High School. Cassie's Aunt Allison and Uncle Frank asked Cassie to come over to their house to watch the animals and the house until Sunday because they were going away on some trip, and they admired Cassie. She didn't do drugs, she was a model student, and they felt confident that she would look after the animals, feed the animals, and not leave the house in shambles while they were away. There are three key people in this case besides Cassie being the fourth, one of them being her boyfriend Matthew Beckham, number two and three being Cassie's classmates Brian Draper and Tori Adamick. On August 31st, 2006, Tori phoned a buddy named Joe Lucaro and asked if he could purchase him a couple of knives from a pawn shop because he wanted to start like a catalog, a collection. Tori and Draper drove Joe to a pawn shop, and Tori bought one knife from the pawn shop, whereas Brian bought three knives. They just bought many knives. And these were the knives that were used in the murder of Cassie Jo Stoddart. So Cassie arrives at the home, her aunt and uncle's home on Whispering Cliffs Drive, and she chills there for a few hours by herself. She decided to phone her aunt Allison on September 22nd and asked if whether her boyfriend Matt Beckham could come over. And of course she said yes, because she knows what type of person Cassie is, and she just knows that Cassie is not no messy person that's gonna throw a party and the house is gonna be like very dirty. Like, she's not that person. She knows that, and so she said yes, sure, why not? And keep in mind, Cassie simply wanted Matt to come over, nobody else. So Matt shows up at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house around 6 p.m., but little did Cassie know that Matt actually invited Brian and Tori to come over. And so Brian and Tori get there around 6:30 to 7 p.m., and Cassie was irritated because she specifically asked her aunt if Matt can come over and not some two dudes from her class that she barely knew. Nevertheless, the four ended up watching a movie called Kill Bill. However, before the movie was over, Brian and Tori left. But before they left, Cassie had actually given them like a grand tour of the home and even showed them the basement. And in the 2 hours that Brian and Tori were there, Brian managed to unlock the basement door that went to the backyard door, like the basement backyard door, allowing him and Tori to return to the house later that night to murder Cassie. Once Cassie finished giving the grand tour, Brian and Tori said they're about to dip and head to a cinema to watch the movie Holes, which is kind of a victory for Cassie because she didn't want them there in the start. In the beginning, in the first place. But Cassie had no idea that going to the movies to watch Holes was a deception. About 15 minutes later, after Brian and Tori left to go put on their masks, their uniform, and gloves, they actually went to the back of the house, to the basement door, like the back basement door, since it's unlocked, and they went inside of the home. Now, this is where stuff just, I can't talk today. This is when things start to get a little suspicious for Cassie and Matt. The power circuit completely just randomly goes out, which ends up leaving Cassie and Matt uneasy. I mean, I would be too. Imagine being plunged into darkness. Scary. And Matt and Cassie knew that the only way they could turn this power on if they were to go to the basement. And they knew there was no way in hell they're going to the basement. Instead, they gathered on the couch praying that the lights would turn on. A few minutes go by and the power is still out partially. Like, the lights kept flicking on and off, like once in a while. And Cassie and Matt, again, that was just adding to their fear. One of the Contria's dogs, according to Matt, began barking at the basement door. And while Matt was left paranoid, he didn't want to panic and make Cassie even more terrified than what she was. Just like the prior time, they failed to get up and investigate. It was almost time for Matt's mom to come pick him up. But Matt didn't want to leave Cassie in this predicament. So he calls his mom before she comes and asks for permission to stay so that he can comfort his girlfriend. And mind you, he already told her about the dog barking at the basement door and the lights going on and off. And his mother says no, because you're 16 years old, you need to come home. And however, she did mention that Cassie can stay the night with us and I'll drive her home in the morning. So Matt tells Cassie his mother's response, and Cassie said, no, I can't leave. I promised my aunt and uncle I'd watch the house, feed the animals. I can't leave until Sunday when they come back. Between 10:30 p.m. and 11, Matt gets picked up by his mom. Matt contacted Brian and Tori and explained that he just left the home and he wanted to see what they were up to. But because Matt couldn't understand what Brian and Tori were saying, he told the cops that he believed they were still in the movie theater. But isn't that strange, though, that they picked up, because literally no one answers their phone in while they're watching a movie. Like, you could just text, not answer the phone. But no, they answered the phone and they did not text. But anyways, the real reason why they were whispering was because they were in Cassie's basement. And if they were to not whisper, Cassie might just hear them. And once again, Draper and Tori cut the power out again once they knew and they heard Matt leave. Now, their whole reason behind playing with the lights was to get Cassie to come to the basement, turn the power on so that they could murder her. But when that plan failed, they started to get impatient and crept upstairs. Brian slammed a closet door at the top of the stairs in an attempt to terrify Cassie once again. The plan failed. The boys came to the living room and brutally attacked and stabbed Cassie 30 times, 12 of which had the potential to be deadly. After they killed Cassie, Brian hopped in Tori's vehicle. They drove off, and that's when they turned their camera on and started recording their reactions to committing murder for the first time. Take a listen.
Cassie, we just left your house. This is not a fucking joke. I stabbed her in the throat and saw her lifeless body just disappear. Dude, I just killed Cassie. Oh, fuck. That felt like fucking real. I mean, it went by so fast.
Shut the fuck up. We gotta get our act straight.
Okay.
The next morning, on September 23rd, 2006, Matt called Cassie, but Cassie, on the other hand, never answered the phone. Even Anna, Cassie's mother, tried to reach her daughter many times, but the call was unsuccessful. Matt spent the whole evening with Tori Adamick, and he voiced his worries about Cassie to Tori Adamick, since they were staying together for that whole evening. It was unusual for her to not return his calls and texts, so he asked Tori if he could stop by at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house to check up on her. And Tori's response was, no, because I don't have enough gas to complete the journey and my car might get stuck. Matt was a little suspicious and irritated, but he said, whatever, it's fine. Cassie's aunt and uncle and cousin returned to their house the next day, September 24th, 2006, at 1:15 p.m. on a Sunday. Cassie's cousin was the first one to enter the house, followed by her mother, Allison, and father, Frank. Allison realized that the door was unlocked, which is suspicious, and that there was shattered glass on the floor and the staircase. The more they walked into the house, they seen Cassie laying in a pool of her own blood on the living room floor. Allison then called 911 in a panicked tone. When the detectives arrived, they spent the next hour going over the scene, gathering evidence. Aside from Cassie and the shattered glass, they discovered nothing. Investigators then turned to the people who were around Cassie at that time, one of them being her boyfriend, Matt Beckham, who was the last one to see Cassie alive. Matt explained that his mother picked him up around 10:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. and that he had gone home to watch a movie with his family after attempting to phone Cassie, which the call was unsuccessful because she's dead, but he didn't know that. And so Matt and his family actually cooperated well with the police and investigators, and Matt even offered to undergo a polygraph exam, in which he did, and he passed. As the police was asking Matt about that evening, they also asked Matt about his pals Brian Draper and Tori Adamick that he knew since their previous school year, and Matt's response was quite shocking to the police. He told the authorities that Brian and Tori had a thing for Cassie and that he wouldn't be shocked if Tori and Brian had returned to the home after he had gone, knowing Cassie would be home alone. Later that day, investigators went to Tori's residence to speak with Tori about Cassie's death, and Tori said, yeah, I was hanging out with Brian, Cassie, and Matt on that Friday night, but me and Brian only went to Cassie's aunt and uncle's house because we were expecting a party to be going on. When it became clear that there was no party, he said him and Draper decided to go to the movies instead. So the investigators were like, oh, so then what did you watch at the movies? And Tori said, I can't remember. And the investigators were like, okay, just tell us a name, main characters, anything. And Tori said, I don't remember. The next day, September 25th, 2006, investigators went to Brian's home to question Brian Draper about Cassie's death in front of his mother. During the interview, Brian began crying and he basically retold the same story that Tori told the detectives the day before, and Draper, like Adamick, was unable to provide any information to the investigators regarding the alleged movie they watched at that cinema. It's clear something isn't right. So the investigators, they go to the cinema to see who was working that Friday night to confirm if they seen Brian and Tori come in and watch a movie. However, this police soon found out that the lady who was working that Friday night said that none of them entered the cinema, and it was clear to the police that Draper and Tori were hiding something and that they were already starting to lie. On Wednesday, September 27th, Brian returned to the police station for more questioning, and they immediately recognized something was wrong with him, based on the way that he was acting. It appeared as though he was agitated. So Brian sits down and he just starts having a breakdown. And the investigators were happy because they're thinking, well, we finally have something. Brian then tells detectives that he unlocked the basement door in the house when Cassie was giving the grand tour with the intention of returning to kill her. He also stated that they were playing with the power circuits, and that while they were playing with the power circuit, hoping that Cassie would come to the basement for their prank, Brian said that Tori started to get, like, trigger happy, saying that he had to kill Cassie. It's the perfect moment. We have to do it, blah, blah, blah. So they took it up a notch and they came upstairs. They shattered glass. They started slamming the doors. And that's when they went to the living room and stabbed Cassie 30 times. During the interrogations, they each blamed each other. Brian said that he was in the same room when Cassie died, but that he never stabbed her. And then he begins to switch his story, saying that he did stab her like 3 times because Tori demanded him to. Brian also told investigators that they drove to Black Rock Canyon and burned the evidence. So Brian actually brought the investigators to where they burned and hid the evidence. And so when they get there, the investigators found stick matches, a pair of black boots, a melted brown hydrogen peroxide bottle, a Sony videotape that had basically the whole process from planning to kill Cassie to actually murdering her. And I quote, in the videotape, there was one of the guys basically said they're sorry to her family, but it just had to happen. And that videotape was later played in the trial. The investigators also found masks, lots of knife weapons, daggers, and a blue plastic garbage bag. At the trial, the boys said they were inspired by the movie Scream and the Columbine shooters, Dylan, Cleobold, and Eric Harris, and that they wanted to be known as famous murderers that didn't just kill one person, but a bunch of people. Yeah. Brian and Tori were both arrested on September 27, 2006 for first-degree murder. Thankfully, they were stopped, and that they were actually found guilty on separate dates. On April 17, 2007, Brian was found guilty, and on June 8, 2007, Tori was found guilty. Despite having 2 different dates, on August 21st, they were both given a mandatory life sentence without the chance of parole, plus 30 years for the conspiracy to commit murder. Not long after that, what a surprise, Tori and Brian Draper filed a notice of appeal with the courts. Brian attempted to get parole after 30 years, and his request was denied. Tori, on the other hand, was attempting to get the entire first-degree murder charge dropped. His entire reason was that the state didn't offer enough evidence to pin first-degree murder on him, and that's why it should be dropped. He also stated and argued that it was Brian who killed Cassie, because if you listen in the Sony videotape, Brian is the one who said, "I just killed Cassie, oh my God." And not, "We killed Cassie," basically putting the whole blame on Brian. And guess what? Tori's appeal was denied. They're both serving their time at Idaho State Correctional Institution. Cassie's aunt and uncle, on the other hand, tried to sell their property every single year since the death of their grandchild in 2006. But no one wanted to buy a property where a well-known murder took place. Final thoughts. So straight off the bat, these boys shouldn't be let out. Clearly, they planned it out. They had the intention. They wanted to be famous. They did this for fame. They wanted to kill more people other than Cassie. They just shouldn't be let out. They deserve it. just listening to the recording is so disgusting and creepy, and how they're bragging about killing somebody. It's just off. I feel so bad for Cassie's family, especially her 13-year-old cousin who fell into depression and tried to commit suicide, along with her aunt and uncle who are constantly blaming themselves for leaving Cassie alone that night. They shouldn't feel terrible because, I mean, how could they have known that a pair of crazy 16-year-olds were going to murder her? What I found strange, though, was that when Cassie's body was being examined, there were four distinct DNAs under her finger, and none of which belonged to Tori Adamek. Who did the other three belong to? How did it get there? I don't know. I don't have the answer, and nobody seems to know. And, yep, that's all for today's episode. Make sure you comment your thoughts and always trust your instinct. If something isn't right, it probably isn't, or else you wouldn't be getting such feeling. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.